Terek that we did yesterday, the Mitzudas Rashi and the Radak. So today we're going to do the Malbim, round four in the boxing ring. Round four, we're up to the Malbim, which appears on page, on Meir Abdov's in two places now, I see.
845.
Two places.
45.
There's the virtual mayor and there's the real mayor.
Well,
the
books.
The real mayor stand
up. Cooking the books, he's cooking the books. Okay, Pasik Aleph in the Malbim, which appears on page
845
towards the bottom. And I believe Eliezer is here as well. 845 Pasik Aleph Hine. Ato now Yisaper Ich Yovei Gogu Magog Bapam Acharoin Al Yerushalayim. Now we are going to discuss the final battle. Okay, the apocalypse. She'oz yagia ad Yerushalayim atzma. In this battle, he will reach the gates of Yerushalayim, and the Malbim in the parenthesis explains why. Ki ba'pe'amim harishonim lo yagia b'Yerushalayim. In the previous episodes, where Gog and Magog launched an attack on Yerushalayim, did not reach Yerushalayim. Ki moshe perashti b'chiches b'simlam ches v'zeh she'amar she'yova yom hamiyuchol Hashem. Ve'oz v'chulak shel lalech v'kibir ki kvar yaskil l'shlol shalol v'lavoiz baz b'Yerushalayim atzma. Now take note that the Malbim is learning the period, the Pshuta Shel Mikra, not like the Targum, not like Rashi and the Mitzudos. He is following in the approach of the Radak, that the subject of the chulak shel lalech is the Jewish people. That our spoils will be plundered. So the means shilolech and chulak will be divided. Shilolech, which means us, it means the Jewish people will suffer defeat. They will suffer defeat, and Gog Magog will rob and plunder our wealth. Again, this is unlike the Unkelis, the Targum, which explicitly says he adds words into the pasuk that do not appear. If you look in the Targum, he adds the words V'falgun base Yisrael, the Jewish people, they will divide Nichsei Amemaya. He adds two different nouns. The base Yisrael dividing the assets of the Amemaya. Okay, that was what the Targum said. But you know, the truth is the grammar of the words, the grammar really appears to be more strength, more support to the Radak and the Malbim, is V'chulak, it will be divided, Shilalech, your spoils, Bekirbech, in your midst. The word Shilalech appears to be leaning towards the parish of the Radak and the Malbim, but the word Bekirbech, that word appears more to lean towards the Targum. In any event, the truth is, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. In the beginning of the war, the Gog u'Magog will succeed, they will win a couple of battles, and they will steal. But when the war is over, when the battles are over, and the war is won, it will be us that will plunder the spoils from our enemy, and as the Mitzudas really said, we're not really taking anything new. It's really, we're just getting back what is rightfully ours, that we're getting back what they stole from us, period.
Mashiach and Yosef has to get killed.
Also. Oh, so that, first of all, getting killed is not a guarantee.
Right.
It says it's a maybe. Oh. And if we're Zoycha, and if we're Mespalel, everything about Mashiach is extremely bizarre. Okay. Okay, one more time, those are the last words of Pasuk Aleph in the Malbim. V'oz then v'chulak shelech bekamech ki kvar yasa l'shlol shlol. He already has begun to distribute the spoils. V'lovoiz baz b'yushalayim atzmok mefarsh eich yezeh. Now Pasuk Beis is coming to explain exactly, to describe to us in more detail exactly what will happen during these battles in the time of Mashiach. Pasuk Beis, v'yosafti, I'm on page 845, v'yosafti eskol hagoyim, Hashem yitein b'lev hagoyim, sheyis asru el Yerushalayim la milchama. Hashem will inspire the nations to come to battle. וכבר הספואר יחזקאל למדבייס וסימן למדחס, שבאחרס הימים יסעסו בני אדם לקחס אס ירושלים יד הישמעאלים. So Yechezkel, he already described it as going to be the Crusades. This is Mamash the Crusades, where Bnei Edom, they're going to gather, they're going to march 3,000 miles to Yerushalayim to take back, to take hold of Yerushalayim from the ones who had Shalita, the Muslims. They're going to take it back from them. Miyad Yishmaelim, the Oz and then Tilokeru Ir Vinoshasu Habotim. Then the city will be captured, the homes will be demolished, and half the people go into exile. However, Edom will not be fully successful. And that's an historical fact. Historically, they did not. It went on for 300 years. It's still going on. Okay.
So yeah. Are you saying Malbin is talking about an event that happened in the past?
Well, he's quoting Sefer Yecheskel. Sefer Yecheskel. No, there are many dimensions. You cannot ignore the fact for the last almost 1,000 years, the Crusades are still going on. I mean, this is a very common idea, which everyone says. Even the Goyim say
that
this.
That isn't what I'm asking.
Yeah.
What I'm asking is about the future. And this is supposed to be a futuristic.
Well, history repeats itself. History repeats itself. There are cycles.
But
there
if you interpret it as something in the past, then you're taking something away from what he's saying.
Well, this is what we discussed yesterday. Milchemes goig u'magoig. You can look at it on many, many different levels. If you want to look at it very, very literal, you want to say that in the end of days, whenever that is, nothing has happened yet. There's going to be this major battle, and we're going to read the psukim very literally. And nothing that we've read here, we've learned all this time, has happened yet. Certainly there are people that take that approach. Everything is yet to happen. But the more you learn, the more you delve into this, the more it becomes very clear that there are many dimensions to Milchemes Goyg U'Magog. Milchemes Goyg U'Magog is a war that spans generations, leading to the ultimate coming of Mashiach. And when you read something like this, how could you be in denial to realize that the Crusades...
Because the end results that are predicted have not occurred.
Well, the end result is V'hoi Hashem l'melech al kol aretz b'yam hu yi Hashem echad shmo echad. That certainly has not yet happened. That certainly has not happened. The ultimate peace...
Nasati shalom aretz
ushachavti ve'in macharid. What?
Even what we've seen here.
Well, there are different elements. There are different elements, different dimensions. Unfortunately, a lot of history has been lost from us. You know, the Crusades, the first Crusade, the second Crusade, the third Crusade. We don't know everything that happened. There are very few records as to what exactly happened, and there are contradictions, there are discrepancies. The people who wrote, just like today in the media, everything is slanted towards your agenda, towards this new word, not a new word, but this popular expression, the narrative. Okay, this has become one of the most popular words of this year, the narrative.
Yeah, right.
It was like ground zero was the key
concept.
The buzzword.
I mean, what do they say? The winners write the history book.
Exactly. So you have there's a Christian record of the First Crusade, and there is a Muslim record of the First Crusade. And they're not the same. They have a different slant as to what happened. And we don't even know exactly what happened. Over here we have a wreck, we have a prophecy, what will happen. And it's a continuous battle in this world between Islam and Christianity for Shlita, world dominance. We, the Jews, are the collateral damage. They don't view us even as a player in this battle for world dominance. They're basically an equal number of Christians, people who pledge their allegiance to Christianity, as there are people who pledge their allegiance to Islam, and they dominate the world. There are other religions. Those religions are minor, or insignificant, especially since they're not really part of the civilized world, those other religions. And Jews are only 15 million people in the world at this point in time, and we probably had even less before. We're not even a player. And what's the Chil Hashem is, they are fighting over Eretz Yisrael. Each one claims they are the Baal HaBos, and the Emes is that neither of them are the Baal HaBos. We have this, you know, in English, we have this expression, my enemy's enemy is my friend. Well, guess what? By us, you know what the expression is? My enemy's enemy is my enemy. That's the reality for the Jewish people.
Yep.
Here they are.
Meaning you have no friends.
You have no friends. Our enemy's enemy is, it's interesting. I just reviewed this not that long ago. There's a very, very popular word from idea which has been repeated about 1,000 times in every sefer of Machshava in the name of Rav Chutner. Rav Chutner, he wrote about this in Pachad Yitzchak. It's extremely popular. What exactly is the difference between Esav and Yishmael relating to Klal Yisrael? So Rav Chutner explains. Esav, their war against us is our religion. That's Western civilization is against the moral conscience of the Jew. The religion, they have an ideology. They have replaced us. They Hashem has abandoned the Jewish people, and Hashem has replaced us with them. They cannot tolerate our religion, and their war against the Jewish people for the last 2,000 years is that we should convert. That's pretty much what it is. We should convert. We should accept. We should acknowledge. We should convert. That's not Amalek. Okay, Nazi Germany, they didn't want anyone to convert. It wasn't a Christian battle, Nazi Germany. It was just genocide. But the Nazis, they came and went. They rose up, they made a lot of trouble, and they disappeared off the face of the earth. And who we left with, when the Nazis are gone, who we left with? Oh, they're old enemies. Our old enemies, the church, is the Pope, is the Christians. They didn't do anything. They were very happy to get rid of us during World War II. So when we look at these moments in time, the massacres, the pogroms, a lot of these things are just blimps in the big picture. But the steady enemy that's always been there for 2,000 years nonstop is Esav. What does Esav want? Esav, they're like the Yevonim, and a lot of the Farshim actually say this. Esav Edom is very much related to the Yevonim, where they're not really interested in wiping us off the face of the earth. They need us.
That was a culture war.
They want us to convert. It's always been about in the Crusades, will you convert? Baptism.
Now nobody cares about that.
Now, I don't know, it's just different.
The church is
dead.
A weak force.
It's very, very weak. But Esav traditionally, he did send the Eliphaz to kill Yaakov Avinu, so you can't totally. Esav also is the grandfather of Amalek. But in world history, Esav, their goal is that we should abandon our religion. We should. This is where Rav Chutner says this. Yaakov stole the firstborn right. Yaakov, the Bechor, does the Avoda. The Bechor was the spiritual heir to Yaakov Avinu. Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov were the religious leaders of the world. Who's the heir to this of religion? The Bechor. Who's the Bechor? Esav was meant to be the Bechor. So what happened? Rivka said, no, he's not eligible to be the religious leader of the world, so I'm going to transfer it has to be given to Yaakov. Now, what about Yishmael? Yishmael has an entirely different agenda. Yishmael, they don't want us to possess the land. They don't want us to possess territory. They want us out of the Middle East. They don't want us there. Why? Because of what Sarah said. Ki lo yidash im bini im yitzgoresh es ben ho'amo hazos. Yishmael has no Yerusha. They have nothing in this world. They have no land. They have no territory. Nothing. And they were driven out from the land by Sarah. And what they felt was Hashem promised Eretz Yisrael to Avraham. And Avraham's Yoresh, the Bechor, the first Yoresh is Yishmael. So Yishmael believes in their neshama, whatever that means. the collective neshama of Yishmael, that they are entitled to Eretz Yisrael. And when Sarah said, Goresh ben hamo hazos ki lo yir, ki hi lo yirash ben hamo hazos ilim Yitzchak, they cannot tolerate that. That we have no land. Esav has land. Ki nasati is Har Seir. Hashem gave Har Seir to Esav as a Yerusha. Ki lo Esav nasati es Seir. They have a massive chunk of territory. So Esav is very happy where they are. Esav is very Western civilization. They have Europe. They have whatever they have. America. They have the whole world is there. They have land. So what don't they like about us? They're jealous that they feel that they were meant to be the Bechor. And the Bechor in ancient times means religious leadership. Religious leadership. That's what a Bechor, the Avodah was meant to be done by the firstborn. The firstborns only lost the Avodah when they worshipped the eagle. It was taken away from them and it was transferred to the Kohanim. But the Bechor, the fight over the Bechor means the opportunity to represent Hashem in the spiritual realm. That was denied from Esav. And Esav can never live it down that he was rejected in this world to represent divinity in this world. And that's why they never let it down. They created their own version of divinity with their own religion. And they keep on, for 2,000 years, they've been trying to get rid of us, to shove us out, and to tell us Hashem has abandoned you and he has replaced you with us. It all goes back to the beginning. Hashem gave Esav much, much more territory in this world than he gave to Klal Yisrael. So Esav has no problem with the Jewish people conquering the entire Eretz Yisrael and keeping it for themselves. Get rid of the Arabs. Get them all out of there. Esav has no problem. America has no problem letting the Jews conquer the Temple Mount and live there. They really have no problem. What is Esav really jealous of? They're jealous that after we conquer, the reason why America doesn't want the Jewish people to conquer the whole Israel and expel the Arabs, it's not because they don't want us to have the land. Because what are we going to do with the land? We're going to build a temple. A temple? You're going to build a temple on the Har Habayis, the Temple Mount? A temple? And you're going to worship God? No. America, we the Christian, it's a Christian country, we represent God, the divinity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is us. We're the Bechor. Rivka, what Rivka did is void. It's null and void what Rivka did. Yishmael, their issue is land. We just want a place to live. Their religion, it's not an issue.
It's not about living there because when we weren't there, they weren't there either. So, no.
Well, they were there for a nice. They were there. They were there for a nice period of time. They definitely were there. It's a jealousy. It goes back to the insult of Goresh es ben ho'amo hazos kilo yirash im bini im Yitzchak. Now here's the problem. So each one has a different agenda. Esav's agenda is don't practice your religion. Even if you want to live in Israel, you can live the whole. You can have the whole Israel. But just don't be Israelis. Don't be Jews. You could have the Temple Mount. You can raise the whole Temple Mount. Have a nice park. If the Israelis would say to the Americans, we just want to conquer the Arabs are causing a lot of trouble in Temple Mount. So you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna raise the whole Temple Mount and we have a park for children. A nice park, and everyone can go play off swings. And we'll have slides like over here on Avenue. Oh, a nice park. You know what America would say? That's a great idea. I said, why don't you go ahead? We'll pay for it. Go ahead, and we'll do it for you. You know why America doesn't want the Israelis to go raise Temple Mount? It's because what are we going to do with the Temple Mount? We're going to build a temple, and we're going to worship God and claim that we represent Hashem in this world. That they can never live down. Never. Because they cannot accept the fact that Esav, their ancestor, was the Bechor, and he was meant to represent the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we took it away from him. That they'll never live down. Yishmael couldn't care less about religion. It's not about our religion. If according to, if we would go to move to America and build a temple in America, they would be very happy as long as we get out of that land. By them, it's a matter of land, territory. They have nothing. Goresh es ben homo hazais. So here's the deal. We can deal with each one of them one at a time. We can deal with Yishmael. Yishmael, you want us out of the land? Okay, we'll leave temporarily. If that's what it takes to make peace, all the Gedolim say this. If the ability to live in peace means to give them land, many, many Gedolim Yishmael say, so give them whatever they want. If you can guarantee that giving land will bring peace, give them land. The reason why no one's doing this is because we know good and well that that's not going to solve the problem, because they want everything. They don't want us. They want us out entirely. So it's not going to work. But we have a means of dealing with Yishmael. Esav, we also can deal with Esav. Esav, they don't want us to represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As long as we find our own place, we're not in their face. We have to just get away from them. The danger is when they both come together. When Esav and Yishmael, they make a shirach. When our enemy's enemy comes together, then we have no place to go, and they don't want us to exist. We have no territory, and we cannot even be a guest in another country, because we're worshiping the wrong religion. So it's a double problem. It's a double whammy when our two enemies, they come together, they fight against us. We don't want you to worship your religion in your own country, and we don't want you to have your own country. We don't want you to have your own country, because that's the taina of Yishmael. Look, the United Nations, when the State of Israel was founded, the only ones that voted against it were the Arabs. Why? Because the Arabs do not want us to have a country. They don't want us to have a country. But Esav, the United States, and the other members of the West civilization, gesunde hey, you want a country? Have your own land. We have Seir. You have your own land. You want to go and you want to worship? Just don't make believe to represent. Don't represent God in our face, on our territory. On our territory, we know that our religion has replaced you. So go to your own land. You could have your own land. But Yishmael says, no, we're the Yoresh of that land. So they're gonna bounce us to America. In America, you can't serve Hashem. I mean, Baruch Hashem, we can over here, but I'm saying generally in Golis, because Esav says we are the heir to the others to represent God. When the two of them come together, it is lethal, lethal for us.
Yeah, Rav Moshe Shapiro said, I think I said this once, said his biggest nightmare was the passion of Yishmael married to the technology of Edom.
The shirach. Vayelach Yishmael el Esav. Vayelach Esav el Yishmael. He married at the end of his life. Yishmael, Esav married to a woman with Bosmas.
Mochlas
Bas Yishmael. That's the also love of Maisa of a similar book. Let's go further. So there are different dimensions. But going back over Pasuk, let's go back to Pasuk Gimel. Pasuk Gimel again in the Malbim on page 4, 845. Vayotza Hashem nilcham b'goyim ha'ilu kvar hispar b'yicheslo she'Hashem yishlach mehuma bein shnei ha'lechamim. Hashem will send a mehuma, confusion between these two nations that are going to battle one another. Vayargu ish es achiv she'zeh yeh al yidei hashkachas Hashem. There's going to be a war between these two nations. V'yidmeh b'zeh ki yoyim hi lochamo b'yom k'rav ki yesh hevdel bein k'rav bein mehuma. This is a typical Malbim. The Malbim is a mumche on synonyms. What is the difference between the word kirov and the word milchama? The answer is shebakirov. When we use the term kirov, uloichem im oyvoy bikarov umisabekimo, it is a wrestling match. It is boots on the ground. It is hand combat. The hamilchama tiye gam meirachoik. Milchama is an airstrike. It is laser-guided remote missiles. What?
Remote warfare.
Remote, virtual drones. What greater example of Merachayk is a drone? Okay, who makes the best drones, by the way, in the world? Turkey. Turkey makes the best drones. Who makes the best tanks? Israel. Who makes the best airplanes? America. every country. How come the Israelis can't make such good drones? How come America can't make such good tanks? Isn't it amazing? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives every nation a unique koyach, their own unique ability.
So that they just have to adapt to their environment. That's what
I'm saying. Right, but they have to make, they can't do it for some reason.
Israeli tanks are made more for the desert, the warfare.
Well, they're all different types of terrain. All the countries of the world, they buy tanks. It's a very big for their economy.
Turkeys don't fly.
But they make, that's a fact. They make the best drones in the world. They're all coming to Turkey to buy their drones. So, why can America make such a good drone? What's the problem? I don't know. Yeah.
The F-35, Israel
full purchase. Yeah, they made some minor adjustments.
But I'm saying that the United States customized it for them, and
okay, but the one who made the main technology, Israel didn't make the F-35. It was made in America.
Yeah,
F-35 is. They say it's like a marvel of technology. I have to read up on it. What it could do, whatever. In any event, when it comes to Muhammad means from a distance, remotely, rak mikarov. That's why it's called karov, means hand combat. Man against man.
Like,
to come close. The koyach eloi kai nisi with a miraculous force.
It's referred to as the stei hakrav, the battlefield.
The battlefield, the stei hakrav. So this is a beautiful idea to appreciate the difference between the word milchama and the word kirav. Hashem yilochem lochem. Hashem will fight for you. You're not involved in combat. Hashem, from a distance, Hashem will take care of things for you. When it says kiyom kirov, it means there's going to be hand combat. Okay, there's going to be fighting in the streets. That's a pretty scary thing. And you would think, we all think that when it comes to Muhammad Skoy Gumagi, it's very advanced. It's going to be all a cyber war. Everything is going to be the most remote as possible. And yet, in the end of days, we're going to go back to like ancient times. It's going to be hand combat.
Wrestling.
Isn't that Mamish wrestling with your fists? The
Israeli form of martial arts is known as Krav Maga.
Fascinating. They took that same exact word. So it's you have to now go through the entire Tanakh and analyze every time it says the word Milchama, every time it says the word Kirav, and it has needs a whole different type of battle. Plus the Galad. From a distance, exactly.
Right.
The Amduragla. Okay, that's where this is. Okay, we do that. Okay, that's the next one. Okay, now let's take a look over here. We finish up with these three psukim. Let's take a look over here. The Mamar Chazal. Back to page 844. The Hanoshim Tishogalna. Elu Devarim. One of the tragedies during this Muhammad Skoy Gilmug is that the women are going to be raped. Okay, isn't that what it says? That's really what it says here. Elu Devarim Kisuvim Veloy Nikroim. There are certain words that the Torah is delicate. There are certain words that are written, but we do not read the actual word. For example, it says Tisha Galna. It says this in the Teichecha. In the Teichecha, the Kuri Tisha Chavna, to lie down. It's a delicate word, and this is part of the purity of the Jewish people, not to speak vulgar, not to speak to refined refined line. You can tell an infinite about a person who does not speak nivul peh. All these politicians, you hear reports of behind closed doors, the nivul peh, people come out and they say they were with Obama.
Exactly, are you reading this?
I'm reading the page 844. 844 Pasuk Beis on the very bottom, Likutei Shas.
Oh.
On the very, very bottom, we're now up to round five of Mamorei Chazal. You hear all the time about people who it speaks volumes about who you really are, the way you speak. A person that never says nivul peh. It's a dignity of being a human being. And you know, you go analyze think of all the presidents of the United States of America. You look at the ones that we know never said nivul peh. How many of them are there? Are there any of them?
Behind
closed doors. Did Reagan say nivul peh behind closed doors? I don't know. I'm sure there. I'm sure there's. You go online. You can probably dig up this stuff. Obama, we know for a fact. That's not go. Even though he claims, you know, that he's very dignified in public, okay, Trump. Trump. What?
I don't know.
It's very interesting. It's a certain. Truman? Did he speak nivul peh?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Okay. It's very interesting. The Torah part. This is a gili in the kedusha. In the kedusha of the Torah. Of nivul peh, it's an incredible. Gemara says everyone knows when a kala. It's Gemara Masechet Ksuvos. Everyone knows why. I don't know the exact words. Why a kala goes to the chuppah. And anyone that opens up their mouth and says something off color, even if it was meant to be for that person, 70 years of blessing, in a moment he loses it all. All of that blessing that was meant to be for that person, one dirty joke. He forfeits all of the bracha that was meant to be. That's a frightening thing.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a frightening thing. If you cannot listen today in the entertainment industry, it is almost impossible. Like, you know, I don't know, like we used to have these late night comedians.
Yeah.
Remember the olden days? Late at 11:30 at night, they have these. Is it even possible for them to not say a dirty joke? Doesn't exist such a thing. And it's ma kineged kol ha-Torah kula. And here you have it right in front of us. You have this word over here. This word. Now of Hanoshim, the ksiv is a word which means the actual physical action. Mm-hmm. And we don't do that. Instead, it's tishachav. It's a much more delicate word. And I gotta tell you every time that if I would say either word, if I would say the word tishachavna, my parents would have washed out my mouth with soap. Either word. Okay. If you notice in the newspapers, they'll never say the three-letter word that begins with the letter S. Never. They'll say gender. When they have to talk about these things, they'll say gender. Gender neutral. There's a certain sensitivity in the Haredi world, the religious world, not to use certain words. And that is a very beautiful thing. Some people disagree. I'm not going to tell you a certain person. He loves. He talks about. He holds himself to be a very holy person,
right.
and he is a non-Arab. He has a very different derech. And one of the things that really bothers me in his derech and his approach is. He's very explicit in how he talks about certain things. And other people, his peers, don't agree. They really strongly disagree. The issues are the issues, and you can talk about the issues, and you can deal with the issues, but you don't have to express the issues in such explicit terms. That's how the Goyim talk. That's not the way we talk. It says in the Gemara, I heard from Rabbi Pesach many years ago. He made a very big impression on me. On Tisha B'Av, he said that in time of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, in the mice of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, after he was insulted, so he went to the to the Roman authorities and said the Jews are rebelling. That was his revenge. And how do you know? I'll tell you how we can prove it. why don't you send them an offering? Send them an animal, a beautiful animal, an offering to offer as a korban in the Beis HaMikdash. And let's see if they accept it. That will be the sign if the Jews submit to your authority. And they selected a beautiful animal that was perfect, and they sent it with him. And he took it and he made a blemish in the lip and in the eye. A teeny little blemish. And it came arriving the Beis HaMikdash, and the Chachamim did not know what to do. Because the halacha is that even a blemish in the lip and the eye disqualifies, it's called a mum, and the animal is disqualified from being offered. The problem is, by a non-Jew in their temples in an ancient times, when the non-Jews offered animals as sacrifice to the gods, they also did not offer blemished animals. But that only means an animal that's missing an arm or a leg, or has a major defect. But a teeny nick, a teeny little slice in the lip or in the eye, it's nothing. It's not significant. This is meaningless. They're not going to be able to comprehend why this should be a problem. Now, Pesach Kroni said, what is the Musar of the Gemara? That exactly is the difference between a Jew and a non-Jew. A non-Jew, they look at whatever they want. They look at, there's no limitation what they look at. Their lip, they'll say whatever they want. The vulgarity, Lashon Hara, the nivel peh. What is for a goy, not a blemish, the lips and the eyes, the einayim and the lips, for a Jew is a mum. It's a blemish. A Jew that speaks nivel peh, a Jew that looks at things he should not be looking at, this for a Jew is a blemish, and for a goy, it's not. Ad kidei kach. This is the reason why they sent Titoites to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. They cannot comprehend why a dignity in language, why the Torah demands that we speak in a refined way, and why the Torah demands that we guard our eyes. They can't understand this. You tell them the animal has a blemish. What's the blemish? It's a cut on the lip, something in the eye. That's a blemish. You're just making excuses. You just make excuses not to offer sacrifice now. No, this is really a blemish because an animal represents, it's a very simple concept to explain, the animal represents us. And we are not allowed to say certain words. We don't say the word Tisha Galna. We don't say this word. We say Tisha Chavna. It represents us. And if there's a blemish in the lips, it's a sin. Look at the Bible. Look what it says in Zechariah, Art School, page 844. Ksiv, Tisha Galna, but the Kri is Tisha Chavna. Shmira Senayim. Look, there's a whole organization called Teg. They're busy, you can't even get an appointment to go and have them come and install something on your computer, a filter on your computer, so you should not be nifshon Shmira Senayim. The Goyim do not have any understanding. They're clueless, they're in another world, they cannot relate to this concept. Why not? Because this is a Dover Sheb Kedusha. It's an incredible, it's a very delicate thing, but it's an incredibly powerful idea. Who wrote this, by the way? Who said this halacha? The Zinnah who brought this out, the Seifim. The Mesech the Seifim. Who wrote Mesech the Seifim? The Rabbanan Savaroi. The Rabbanan Savaroi were an incredible group of people that came after the Amoraim, after Amoraim, and they to a very large degree, I mean each period of history to prepare Klal Yisrael for Golus, and they were from basically the last. You know, you had the Tekufa of Nevuah, and then the Tekufa of the Chachamim. Today we're no the Chacham Odif Minavi. So who are the Chachamim, the Tanoim, the Amoraim, and the Rabbanon Savaroi, and then came the Goinim. Okay, well, the Goinim really also to a degree, they were more of a transition. But the Rabbanon Savaroi, they edited the Talmud. They were part of the tail end of preparing Klal Yisrael for Golus. And their contribution, what they added, doesn't say this in the Gemara, is they wrote this Eilu dvarim shksuvim v'loy nikraim, to make it very clear that a Jew goes into Golis to preserve his the sanctity of Lashon.
Well, Megillus spells out all the places that he saved the king.
Hey, it's been, it's also, it's also, I guess, how do you, what does it say different?
But I don't understand why the Torah wrote it, Shagana. If they said, instead of Tmei'ah, it's Asher lo Torah hi. Lo le'agit davar shlum.
Say the Maguna. That's why the animals, the kosher, non-kosher animals.
Who written there? Why
was it
written? Why not?
The
Torah should write those. I don't understand why they
created it. So if Kalman asked the question, so what, if this is such an important thing, why did the Torah even write it? Why did they even write it? Why do we have to resort to a Krivich Sif? Why couldn't the Torah just say Tishachavna? Let the Torah go even further. It should go even further. So I guess the answer is because the Torah doesn't want to be in denial. A lot of rabbanim today.
Don't understand what we really mean.
No, so you'll have anyway. It's Torah Shabbal Peh. Anyway, we'll know what it means because anyway we have to resort to Torah Shabbal Peh to know what it really means. But I think the answer is like in today's society, there's a very harsh accusation always being made against yeshivas, against rabbanim, that don't you know what's really going on in the yeshiva. There's, you know, there are some major averos taking place by your talmidim. I'm not going to give you some examples of some things, but every yeshiva, on the outside, everything is fine and good. They have students. And behind closed doors, the yeshiva, it's brought to their attention that there are students in the yeshiva that are engaging in crimes, in horrible, horrible averos. And when you go talk to the administration, oh, what are you talking about? Everyone has a tzad. What are you saying crazy things? It's nonsense. Don't you know what's going on? This, you always hear about this. You live in the world of make-believe. Are you in denial of what's really happening behind closed doors? And the more responsible yeshivas are very well aware of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And they have pay a lot of money to have a lot of professional help to deal with the problems on the inside. But on the outside, you don't go hang up your dirty laundry in the street. You don't do that. The Torah here, in a very delicate way, wrote the word explicitly. As if to say, Torah, you say, I've come and you're right. Torah didn't need to write. If the Torah wants you to teach you this lesson, a person should be very proper and dignified and don't use vulgar language. So why did it even bother to write the word Tishagalna? Don't even write it. Just write it Tishachavna. The answer would be, that would be going too far. That would give you the impression that you're in denial. You're in denial of the reality of what's really going on in this world. You're in denial that there are people that are engaging in activities that are 100% usur, that are called the to'eva, that are exactly what the goyim are doing. The Torah is telling you, don't be in denial. You have to know exactly what is going on. But to the public, there's no mitzvah to hang up your dirty laundry in public. A lot of people don't understand that. People think everything in the world, we live in a world of social media, you have to let it all hang out. There's no such thing as privacy. No such, what? Everything is transparent. It's like the word it's so transparent. Everything has to be so transparent to such a degree where there's absolutely no privacy whatsoever. That's also wrong. There has to be a balance. There has to be an acknowledgement of the reality with all of its horrible and detest details, but you don't let it all hang out. That will destroy society. There has to be some, you know, dignity as well. So it has to spell it the way it is, but it has to be written in a different fashion. Let's go to the next Rambam Chazal. This is the parasha. We blow the trumpets. Usekate machatzoytzoyz. You shall blow the trumpets. Al hatzar hatzorereschem. Al hatzar hatzorer. So the Rebbe here says, let's take a step back. There's a mitzvah derived in this week's parasha to blow trumpets when you go to war. And in fact, there's a big question. I don't know if we once spent time on this. Maybe we did once upon a time. Why today don't we do this? Today, let's say during the war, Gaza, these 11 days that we've just passed through. How come you didn't hear anyone go to the Kaisel and there should be a ceremony at the Kaisel where they're going to blow the shofar? Usikatem al bachatzoitzreitz. I don't remember the whole passage. Alatzar hatzorer es, when the Jewish people are in a state of pain, they're under attack, they are supposed to blow the shofar. So why bizman hazeh do we not do this? I think some hold that we do. Some hold of the opinion that we should be doing it, and I think maybe some people do it. But they don't make it, you don't hear about this. So it says in the pasuk of the Yisraelim, Muhammad Sagul Magul, Kakos of Medaber, the pasuk of this week's parish discusses Muhammad Sagul Magul. In other words, maybe that's part of the answer, is that according to this Mamech Hazal, the only time you're supposed to blow shofar when there's a war is specifically by Mochemet Skoigu Magog. Who says maybe every time the Jewish people are under attack, the pasuk is requiring you to blow the shofar? Talmud Loimar, Vinoishatem, the pasuk there concludes you will be saved. Can we say today in any battle that we have experienced in our history that we have been saved? Every single battle is just, you know, it comes to a certain point, it's just not worth it to fight anymore. You cannot say that it's a victory. You can never really claim victory until Mashiach comes. Amarta, I'll tell you, Tseire, let's go and analyze. Ezohi Muhammad Shayishol no Shaim Mimena, the Ein Achanecha Shibud. The way you know the battle, the war is over, is there's no more Shibud. There's nothing more to worry about. Can you say that about all of the battles that we've experienced in our history? The only time you can actually say that is by Milchemes Goig U'Magog. Ein ata moitzi ela Milchemes Goig U'Magog. That is the only time. D'cheinu oimer v'yotza Hashem v'nilcha magoi mohem. As it says in this pasuk. This pasuk is the source for this week's parasha. How do you like that? Hashkocha pratis. Parashas v'haloyitzcha. And we have a pasuk telling you to blow shofar when you go to battle. Alatzar hatzorer eschem. And we have a dilemma. Does this refer to every single battle, or does it refer specifically to Mochemes Chag U'Magog? And look at this. The pasuk we're learning today over here says, V'yasafti es kol ha'goyim el Yerushalayim. And it says here in pasuk Gimel, V'yotza Hashem v'nilcham ba'goyim mohem kim yilochamo. Hashem is going to fight, and that's going to be the battle that will put an end to all battles, and that's when we will blow shofar. Ma'u oimer, the trumpets. Not just the shofar, you blow trumpets as well. Ma'u oimer, v'hoi Hashem l'melech ha'chalaretz b'yom hui Hashem l'chodesh v'yachad. That's what it means as well. The ultimate battle. Okay, now we go to the next Maamar Chazal. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Emosai Yoivad Shimon Shel Elu Amalek. When will Amalek finally be uprooted? B'shoshe Te'oker Avodah Zarah Hi Ve'Ovdecha. When Avodah Zarah is obliterated and the worshippers of the idols will cease to exist. V'hei Amokim Yechidi Ba'Olam, and Hashem will be the only one in the world. And Hashem's malchus will be forever and ever. At that time, Hashem will fight. Hashem will be the melech. This week's parasha, it's very interesting. This week's parasha, at the end of the parasha, the very interesting Rashi. Rashi there says that when Hashem goes out, Hashem is not like a melech basav adam. A melech basav adam, when he goes to war, he goes out to war with an entourage. He goes out to war with multitudes. He goes to war, what's the correct word?
I think it's Buchalson.
Buchalson. He goes out to war with an army. And when a melech goes to greet another person, when he goes out bishalom, in peace, to meet other people, other kings, he goes out alone. The Ribbono Shel Olam is just the opposite. When Hashem goes to fight for us, he goes out alone. I don't need anyone. I'll take care of this for you. But when Hashem goes to greet us in peace, Hashem is accompanied by all of the Malachi Elohim. He comes with an entire entourage. And here you see a little bit over here. It says in this pasuk, V'yotza Hashem. It's exactly mamash what it says in Nisik's parasha. The end of parasha Baal Oischa, look at the end of parasha Baal Oischa, the very, very end. The Yotza Hashem, here, the Nilcham Bagoy Mohem, when Hashem is going to fight for us, he goes alone. He says to the Malachi Hashores, you stay home, watch the kids. I'll take care of this. No one goes out. Micha Moicha here, the Yotz Hashem Nilcham next. Micha Moicha Beilam Hashem, Be'elu Shachedim Korim Oysam Eloikus Mativan, regarding gods, that other people call them gods, what is their nature? This is what we say in Tehillim, and we say these words in Hallel. Raglehem v'lo yahalechu. They have feet, and the feet are not functional. They have arms, they don't move. They have a nose, they don't smell. Avol mi sh'omar v'lchoye ho'olam enachein. Hashem does not say that. V'yotz Hashem v'nilcham ba'goyim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has actions. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has legs, obviously not physical legs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu travels. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has arms that fight for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses all of his Ivarim, obviously not physical Ivarim, they're actually functioning, unlike these idols, which are total, total nonsense. Okay, but Hashem does at times, he does send agents. Hashem does send, occasionally does send agents. Okay, let's look at the Chumash Hanoch. We haven't had the Chumash Hanoch in a while. Okay, the Chumash Hanoch is the Chidah. Pasuk Aleph on page 845. The first letters of these four words, not in order. Okay, it's not in order. Remez shekvar nischaper harigas hevel. Okay, this is kayin and hevel. This is more Kabbalistic type of stuff. Nischaper harigas hevel sharoga kayin. Haramuz b'soyfei teves yoyim ba v'chulak shalolech. That's number one. Number two, what about the end letters? The end letters, soyf teves gematria kayin im ha-koilel with one more. It's kayin plus one more. So he's saying over here something very interesting. He's saying something very, very fascinating. And that is, this world, just like we have a principle of ma'isa of a similar banim, the first crime in this world was kayin killed Heva. Can you imagine Hashem created Adam Rishon has children, Cain and Hevel, and the first two human beings in this world, the first two children of this world, could not come to peace with one another, divided the world peacefully. Cain had to kill Hevel. That created a horrible stain, in this world. For 6,000 years, the world is trying to repair that damage, to come to learn how to live with one another. And the time of Mulchemes Goig u'Magoig is that moment where man finally learns how to reconcile his relationship with other men. Look, what is this world all about? There have been wars for almost 6,000 years. What's the wars all about? We can't live with each other. Man cannot live with another person. Whether it's a religion, whether it's land, whether it's jealousy, it's women, it's you name it. Everything all together. All of that is rooted in Kain and Hevel. Hashem created Adam and Chava. They had children, Kain and Hevel. And they had a war. They killed, Kain killed Hevel. That says it all. That act of two people not being able to live with each other had a major effect on this world. Ad hayom hazeh, people out there in the world are killing each other right now. That all is traced back to Cain and Hevel. With the coming of Mashiach, and man will finally be able to coexist with one another, it means that the crime of Cain and Hevel has been corrected, has been rectified, they have come to terms with one another. It doesn't just mean kapara. Kapara doesn't just mean, oh, you bring a karban and you're forgiven. Kapara means rectification. There is it's not possible anymore for one man to kill another person. Because you recognize, if Hashem created you and He created me, He didn't create us that we should kill each other. He created us that we should coexist. And it will take 6,000 years until Hinei Yoim Bola Hashem. This is a day of celebration for Hashem. It's a day, we started with that first Rashi. The first Rashi was, why did Rashi say the word Chaviv? We didn't give a good answer. Hinei Yoim Bo La Hashem. What? Chaviv is a precious day. A parent's greatest hana is to see that his children are at peace with one another. If a parent has children and the children don't talk to each other, this is an intense agmas nefesh. I brought into this world children, and they can't be at peace. They fight the whole day with each other. That's an incredible agmas nefesh to see that the children, they help each other. They complement one another to achieve what they need to achieve. This is the greatest nachas. Hashem created Adam v'Chava. They had children, and they kill each other. So how do you think Hashem feels about that? Now we're telling you a whole drasha. Hinei yoim bo l'Hashem. The first letters, hey, yud, beis, lamid, hev, li, my hevel. And the last letters is the gematria of Kayin. I know it's a little bit, I would never say this, but if the Chidah says it, we can accept it. Kayin and Hevel. Oh, now you can understand, get a greater appreciation of what Rashi says. Yom Chaviv LaHashem. Finally, mankind has uprooted, the day now is coming where everything will come into place, where I guess the enemies, those who need to be eliminated, will be eliminated. And the remainder will be purified in the kiln that we mentioned in the previous psukim, where the survivors will be completely free of this stain of what Cain and Hevel did to this world. And now the father of Avinu Shebashamayim, when he sees his children, mankind, living peacefully with one another, there's peace in this world, the opposite of Cain and Hevel killing each other, could there be a day that's more precious for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Impossible. So this Chidah definitely comes and brings to light a little bit, opens up a little bit of the significance, even if you don't take the Gematrias, and you ignore the Gematrias, but the Chidah at least coming to bring out the point. The point is that in the times of Moshiach, when the battle of Gog and Magog is over, and the survivors left in this world are going to be good people, people that are going to be honest, pure, sincere, observant, and the main achievement, it puts a whole new dimension of Yimos HaMashiach. In this dimension, the greatest simcha of Yimos HaMashiach is people will be living to live with other people. They're not going to seek out to kill them. It's not going to be any more Kayin and Hevel. The world is living in the shadow and the echo of Cain and Hevel.
It's interesting that he uses Cain and Hevel, not Yaakov and Esau.
We're going back to the very beginning.
Yeah, right.
The very beginning.
No, when there was no, you shouldn't have been any strife because there was no bone of contention about anything, really.
Now, what's also interesting is Cain and Hevel, they don't no longer exist because Cain and Hevel is gone.
Right.
Cain died. Cain was killed later on. And we all come from Enosh. Enosh, after Cain killed Hevel, Adam and Chav had another child, and they called him Enosh. I'm sorry, called Shes. Shes, ki shos li'elokim zera acher, tachas Cain ki harobo Hevel. So we had Shes, and Shes had Enosh. Shes fathered Enosh. So the truth is, we don't come from Cain. We don't, Hevel, we certainly don't come, because Hevel's dead. Cain, we don't come from, because even though Cain survived, and he did Teshuvah, but Cain ceased to exist. And we all come from Adam and Chava's third. Oh, so there is one little secret, and that is Cain's daughter. Cain had a daughter, and Cain's daughter married Sheis, or something that it came from the women.
So, Noah.
Noah married Kayan's daughter.
Yeah.
Something like that. So even though whatever the details are, but even though it's true, Kayan himself ceased to exist, and the world, by and large, came from Adam and Chava's third child, Enosh, which trickled down to, I'm sorry, from the Sheis, which trickled down to Enosh, and then further down to Noach. But Noach married Nama. And Nama was who? Was the daughter of Kayan. Or
well, some. Achos tuvel Kayan Nama.
Achos tuvel Kayan.
Why does it mention Nama? It says, of course, that's
it came, so there is still in this world a tinge of Kayan. Kayan still did make it down, we all are to some degree a descendant. Let's finish up over here. Next words over here. Finish up over here. V'chulak shalach b'kabeich perush harav marein harav Rabbi Yehoinasan. Okay, Rabbi Yehoinasan Eibeshitz. Okay, this Rabbi Yehoinasan Eibeshitz. This is the chida is really where he sent it. The Yisra B'shas. Kishabas san chedev l'mulchama l'mulchama. V'shalu Yisrael l'chizkiyah ha-melech olav ha-shalom im yichalku es kol ha-shalol o yavozu ish loy. The Mulchama, when san chedev attacked Yerushalayim, the night of Pesach, and miraculously every single one of his soldiers died in the middle of the night. There were only a handful number of survivors, and there was enormous spoils of war lying outside the walls of Yerushalayim. And they asked Chizkiyahu HaMelech, what should we do with those spoils of war? The Amar HaMelech Kol Echo Yavoz Li Atzmoy. He said everyone should take the spoils. The Tamo Lefidus Anchedev Higla As La'aser Sashvatim U'shil Olam. And he stole their assets. He neize ba b'seich haba'im al Yisrael asher b'Yushalayim. And now it has returned. And now, when they came to attack Yushalayim, the spoils of war belong to us. It belong to our brothers, the Aseres Hashvatim. We turn to the next page. Finish up over here. Page 847. V'hagam. Page 847. V'hagam ki shalal Aseres Hashvatim b'chayim b'yad melech Ashur v'chut v'chutar. Even though it was hefker, it was once it became their property. Mikol makom midas chasidus shelo likach mehem. It's the midas chasidus not to take. The hayisoid hayo min hayehudim. Because it really belongs to us. Means the essence where it comes from is us. The yeshkama hekdeishos umasrois lechein tziva sheyavois kol echel li atzmoi v'chol de parish v'ruba parish. Period. Let's go further. Ach le'asid yesh shalal ha'goyim v'yocholim l'chalkoi. L'chalkoi v'zer sh'amar v'chulak shilolech b'kebech ad kan l'shonoi. Now, let's clarify over here. Let's clarify. Okay, this point, we're out of time. But what he seems to be saying over here is, the Amar ha'melech kogbeach kol echod yovoiz le'atzmoi. And here it says v'chulak. It shall be divided. So here's what he's saying. He's saying over here something very interesting. By the battle of Sancheriv, the rule was finders keepers. Every soldier who finds something, whatever you find, keep. If you happen to find $1 million, and your friend finds $10, so good for you and too bad for him. Finders keepers. You found $1 million, he found $10, so you're a millionaire and he's not. In this pasuk it says, all of the money will be pooled into one account. You find $1 million, hand it over. You find $10, hand it over. And we're going to split it equally amongst all of the soul, or everyone. Everyone's going to get an equal distribution. So the question is why? Why Asid Lavo in times of Mashiach will the money be distributed equally, whereas here, finders keepers? So he's saying over here, that's because the money that came there belonged to the Jewish people. It came from us. And it came from us. Agam ki shalal aseres ha-shvatim ho-yi b'yad ha-melech ha-shur v'ahud ha-mikol ma-gam midas chasidus shalom likach mehem. Not to take it. Okay, I'm not exactly sure what he means over here. It V'zeh sh'amar v'chulak sh'ch b'kirbeich. Ad kan l'shana, let me read a little further. The agav shitvei kosaf, and in passing he mentions, kama zimnei chizkiyah melech. I don't know what that means. Uvis and Hejnav Sadidal and Mufarish the Shalul and Novi Lovois or Lachlak, the Omar Lohem and Novi Lovois. The Sham Mufarish the Hosh, you showed the moment as a Shvatim or Boy, the Omar Lohem and Novi, the moment you showed Shnov be at Umay Solom Latahir Ayanshav. Okay, he's going, I mean, you see, he's just, that's something, he's showing something technical that it's not called Gezel. It's not called Gezel because. It's not called Gezel because it's Hefker. It was already, okay, that's a technical point. But this still needs to be addressed. This still needs to be addressed. Why is it that La'asalava, it's called V'chulak, is all the money will be equally divided, whereas by the Mocham of Chizkiyahu, it was not equally divided. Finders, keepers. And it seems like he's saying something that La'asalava, it's not our money. It's not our money. The money that's...
I thought the whole
idea was to recover what we want. That's what the Mitzudas David said. Obviously, he disagrees with that approach. He appears to be saying, we learned in the Mitzudas David that the money that will be given back later on to us is really our money. It's just being returned what they stole from us. He doesn't seem to be saying that. He seems to be saying that lost love in times of Mashiach, the wealth that will be given to the Jewish people will be new wealth. It's not our money. It's the money of the Ummah Sallam. It's going to be a gift. It's going to be Hashem's gift to us. Thus, when you are receiving something that's not really yours, that's a gift, then it's only fair that it should be distributed equally. But when the money is coming back to us, this was the money that belongs to the Jewish people, and it was stolen, and now it's coming back. Now, it doesn't answer the question, then... The way the money was given to the people, whoever you find $1 million, you keep it. You find $10, that's all you get, $10. Now, what's the difference? It's not mine, it's from the Aseres HaShvatim. I don't know the answer, but the concept is, if you're getting back what was stolen for you, well, for me, they stole $1 million. For my friend, they only stole $10. It's not fair. This is not socialism. This is not communism, where all the money goes to the government and then they're gonna redistribute it. This is my money. If they stole from me $100, I'm entitled to get back $100. If they stole from my friend $1 million, he needs to get $1 million. Now you're telling me over here there was such a shkocha pratis over here at the time of Chizkiyahu, when they came and they came. And each person happened to find exactly what they were entitled to because of his long-lost cousin who lived from the Aseres HaShvatim. You know, that's a little bit hard to swallow. I don't know that part. But the concept is definitely true. There are two ways to divide spoils of war in ancient times. One way to divide spoils of war is whoever finds it, you keep it. Whatever you find, you keep. And no one knows, no one's business what you have, what you found, what someone else found. And the other method was, like you go for a car wash, sometimes you give the guy the one a tip, and sometimes they want you to put all the tips in one big plastic bucket, and they redistribute the money to everyone if they even do that. I wonder if they will even do that. But there's a different approach. When the money you are finding, if you're going to tell me that there's a hashkocha pratis, that what you're going to find, you're taking back what's entitled to you, then you don't pool the money. The money, every person takes what they're supposed to get. But if the money that's being distributed is new, it's new. You are getting a gift. Then it's only fair that all of the money should be pooled into one account, and everyone should get an equal distribution. So this is what he explains, very powerful. That's why it says a vichulak. Vichulak means equal distribution. In Chizkiyahu, it's not in the pasuk. It's not in the pasuk, but it's in the Chazal. It was not an equal distribution. It was whatever you find, you keep. And whatever your friend finds, he keeps. To show that at that time, what they retrieved was really theirs. And Hashem works it out that you get back what is yours.
You share in your pool, there's less jealousy, less friction.
Yeah, but we don't even, that's not even an issue over here of less jealousy. Over here, we're dealing here, is it your entitlement or is it a gift? If it's your entitlement, everyone is entitled to something differently. If it's a gift, then it's not fair. Exactly. It's not fair. It should be distributed. Okay, let's really take a very, very short break. I'll learn some Chumash with Akiva literally in 30 seconds.
David HaMelech, David HaMelech, David HaMelech, חלק היוצא למלחמה, חלק יושב על הכלים.
Equally. Equally, because it's not theirs. That's what the Chida is saying. When it, if you go into war, right, you're taking back what's yours, then everyone gets what they deserve. Everyone is different. But if you're receiving a gift, something that's not yours, something new, newfound wealth, then it's only fair that it should be distributed equally. Okay. Okay, everybody, so let's learn a little Chumash today. Parshas Bahaloscha. Parshas Bahaloscha is a jam-packed parsha. It's unbelievable. One of the for Rabbanim here, probably the most material. Parshas Bahaloscha is good for.